Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in Seattle. Has anyone ever compared Russell Wilson to Muhammad Ali? Well, 5 hours before kickoff of tonight's spectacular Thursday night football matchup pitting the Rams and the Seahawks, I'm going to make history by explaining history. History is the diary of winners, not losers. History is going to be very kind to Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. His story will define this era of black NFL quarterbacks, not Colin Kaepernick's. There's a myth popularized via Twitter that history is going to be Colin Kaepernick's best friend, and that 20 or 30 years from now, those of us who reject Kaepernick as a hero will look foolish. History is allegedly going to analogize Cap to Muhammad Ali. Morons believe this. Ali was the greatest. He dominated heavyweight boxing at a time when being the heavyweight champion meant you were the baddest man on the planet. Ali won multiple boxing Super Bowls, two fights against Sonny Liston and Joe Frazier, a rumble in the jungle versus George Foreman. Ali was a victor, not a victim. History is told from a winner's point of view. Beyond retweets and likes, what has Cap won? He tapped out and chose martyrdom in the very decade when black quarterbacks established themselves as NFL winners. The two best quarterbacks in football right now are Russell Wilson and reigning MVP Patrick Mahomes. They sit 1-2 in passer rating. Wilson is the highest paid player in football. Mahomes will surpass him next offseason. Ali dominated during the golden era of heavyweight boxing. Liston, Frazier, and Foreman were all superstars. We're now in the golden era of black quarterbacks. This decade is about the rise of the black quarterback, not the fall of a socially awkward, non-speaking, identity-confused QB who was radicalized by his girlfriend. The NFL began keeping stats on QB starts in 1950. For the first time in the history of the league, three black quarterbacks lead the league in passing touchdowns through four games: Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Jacoby Brissett. When you add in Wilson, Dak Prescott, and Jameis Winston, it's six of the top nine. When you look at passer rating, four of the top five are Mahomes, Wilson, Dak, and Lamar. You can listen to the idiots who want you to believe the NFL is an evil empire exploiting black athletes, or you can look at the facts. Salaries are escalating rapidly, and so is the guaranteed money for elite quarterbacks, and the people in line to get that money look like me, Marcellus, and TJ Houshmandzadeh. This era of the NFL is defined by black excellence, and Russell Wilson is the shiniest example of it. Even more shiny than my man, Patrick Mahomes. Russ has won a Super Bowl, led his team to a second one, and erased all doubt that a black quarterback could do exactly what Tom Brady has done, which is partner with a head coach and lead one franchise to a decade of success. In terms of heritage, in terms of marriage, in terms of winning, in terms of legacy and impact, Russell Wilson has far more in common with Muhammad Ali than Colin Kaepernick. Football is king. And Russell Wilson is the baddest man on the planet right now. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst TJ Houshmandzadeh and Eric Mangini. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Will Russell Wilson be the biggest star of the new era of black quarterback excellence?
No, he will not. And this is an argument that is layered with production. That's the premise we start on. That's what we build upon. And then it gets into marketing, cachet, Q rating, a blade that cuts through, becomes a story greater than just for the purists and those who played or loved the game of football. And I think that's where Russell Wilson will come up short. And even in saying coming up short, he's going to be damn high. If you think about Russell Wilson right now, he's already won a Super Bowl. He's already been on a Wheaties box that according to my local grocery store, didn't sell as well as others who have been on that Wheaties box. You look at him, he's already been primed for this opportunity, and he's 30 years old. Is it going to get greater? Maybe on the field. Is it going to get greater in terms of accolade, cachet, Q rating? I don't see it. This is the meteor that already has showed you how far it's going to go and how much fuel it's going to show and use in that ride. Patrick Mahomes, does he have the blade? He certainly got the game. He's already in this shared experience, kind of like Tom Brady was with Bill Belichick. Oh, you got Andy Reid. He made Alex Smith look good. And already you can hear some of the trepidation. But there's one guy sitting there primed for this, to be the star of this era. A fully formed, fully functional, professional Mike Vick 2.0. And that's Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, who has the least amount of game of those I just mentioned, if he can balance those scales, because he already is going to cut through on every other layer of this conversation. If his game supports what it did early.
Shocked me with that one.
I mean, I'm
it
just
shocked trying, me too.
I'm just trying to, okay, I tell you, too. And here's my evidence.
I thought he was going Dak, to be honest.
Me too, I got it.
Another shared experience with Jerry Jones. Nothing shines brighter than Jerry and that star. I'm going to tell you this. When I went to Atlanta, early 2000s, and walked in Nike Town, and I've been through all the Nike Towns all across this country. In a city with an NBA team, and I've seen it every time, you've seen it too, TJ, the NBA players reign supreme. We just, I got a little baby football section. Mike Vick and the Mike Vick experience. Before Mike Vick won any Super Bowls, oh, he never did. Before Mike Vick went out there and showed you that he was going to ball out, he had an experience. He had a mania. Of all these guys, the only one I see having a mania is Lamar Jackson.
It's shocking.
It seems like every year a quarterback comes in and there's mania associated with him, black or white. What I think that Russell Wilson has done is the conversation is moving away from black quarterback and it's just moving towards quarterback. And that's the direction that it should go. And to me, that's the direction it's heading in a significant way. You don't hear people talk about it in those terms. And that, to me, is the biggest value that Russell Wilson has brought to the equation, is that it stops being about black or white, and it just starts being about quarterback.
Mm. Russell Wilson is, for the question, is he the biggest star for the new era of the black quarterback? He is. Now, that can change really quick, and that's because Patrick Mahomes is on his tail for me. He's right there. Patrick Mahomes is basically going to change the way guys attempt to play quarterback. Now, you got guys in college and high school now, they're going to want to run around, and they're not going to run around to run. They're running around to throw the ball down the field, whereas in years past, the black quarterback, you run around to run. And so now they're going to run around and create time for the receivers to get open. Russell Wilson right now is at the forefront of that because he was the first black quarterback that when he got out, when he could run, he would stay in the pocket at least stay behind the line of scrimmage to try to get a big play down the field and only run because I have to, not because I want to. Mm. And so he is leading the air, but Patrick Mahomes is going to surpass him here soon.
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for Patrick Mahomes to surpass him until he wins a Super Bowl, and that's going to be tough. And you can make the assumption it's going to happen, but I never assume anything like that, particularly when I look at the Chiefs' defense. But everybody has said something interesting. Eric, I'm going to start with you first because I do think you're right that Russell Wilson has made the race conversation as it relates to quarterback moot. It's been settled. He's for virtually a decade, he and Pete Carroll have partnered and have led that franchise to a consistency and a level of success that you just hadn't really seen. Warren Moon jumped from team to team. Doug Williams jumped from team to team. This guy's been in one place, partnered with a head coach, and they've had tremendous success. But when history is written, someone's going to be credited with, like, you know what? This guy is the guy that made race a moot point, and I think it's going to be Russell Wilson. And I think when we look at this year, and look, I do expect Patrick Mahomes to be a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. I expect that.
Yeah.
But I don't think he'll be the pioneer. I think he opened the door Russell Wilson opened the door for Patrick Mahomes, and I don't think Patrick Mahomes is ever going to be able to do anything to diminish that. And the other thing, and this may not be something, Eric, you can speak to directly, but Marcellus and TJ, I'm just telling you, and I know this will be a controversial statement, marrying Ciara and his full embrace, to me, of black culture puts him ahead of Patrick Mahomes, and I don't say that in any way to diminish Patrick Mahomes, in no way, because everybody has a right to choose, particularly when you're mixed race, to choose whatever brand, identity, or whatever you want, and I really don't know what Patrick Mahomes is, how he identifies. I think Russell Wilson has made a decision on what he identifies with, and so I just think he's going to carry that load of being the pioneer black quarterback that took the black quarterback thing to the next level, and I applaud him for it.
But the reason I think that Russell Wilson has moved us past the race discussion is because when we talk about Russell Wilson, we talk about the short quarterback. That's what we talk about with Russell Wilson. It's he changed the game for the short quarterback. It's not about him being white or black. It's now, can other short quarterbacks play as well as he did? And look, the guy came in as a third-round draft pick and saved Seattle. They'd brought in Matt Flynn, they'd paid him a bunch of money, and he comes in, he's able to surpass him, to start, and to do all the things that he's done, and he continues to grow and mature as a quarterback, and to me, the discussion has just moved on. It's he's a great quarterback, but he's a great short quarterback, and can other short quarterbacks be what he is?
But to capture this era, to capture this moment, you are going to make it convenient. It's going to have to be digestible. It's going to have to say, he was the best, he was the king, he was the star. This question is, who will be the biggest star? It won't be Russell Wilson because he doesn't have the it factor. Whatever that it factor is, we are trying to see him created in his rebranding and his 2.0 and his coolness and his new videos and his new style. And credit Ciara for a lot of that. At the same credit where credit's due.
Seattle.
I love it. You know, I mean, he had his ex-wife is white and Ciara's black and things changed and rebranding and all that comes along with it. Respect. But I'm a literalist. When I see star factor, I see someone who has to cut through. I see someone who has to either be like the guy next door who is overcoming obstacles. Let's just be real about the guy next door. Most people have not played in the pros, and most people have not overcome their adversity and obstacles. But damn, which one of these three has the best story that is relatable to most? It's actually Lamar Jackson. Told he couldn't do something, then went out there, despite doing it, people still were doubting him. If he can overcome that in performance, along with everything else comes with his story.
Only thing I'll say about Lamar is just we just haven't seen enough.
Oh yeah,
to me to put him in a conversation with a guy, Patrick Mahomes MVP, Russell Wilson Super Bowl winner, participated in another Super Bowl. But I do think Russell Wilson's little dude story cuts through. I do think, because at the end of the day, and this is the point I was trying to make about Muhammad Ali, nothing cuts through like winning. If Muhammad Ali had not gone to the Vietnam draft and gotten his butt kicked by George Foreman and Joe Frazier, he would be a blip on the radar. He would, oh, that was a nice champion, and he had that little thing with the Vietnam War. Winning cuts through more than anything. Tom Brady's here right now as the biggest star in football history, in my view, because of winning.
And you know what? Drew Brees, despite having greater numbers, is not a bigger star. You know why? Same what? Super Bowl winner, not an MVP just yet. Russell Wilson, Super Bowl winner, not an MVP, short quarterbacks. That's my point. There's someone there primed to overcome even what we're seeing right
but
now.
But this is the thing, though. Like, people forget, Russell Wilson was a third-round pick. Lamar Jackson was a first-round pick. So they obviously believed in Lamar a little more than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was a three-year starter at NC State and was told Mike Glennon is going to take your spot. You got to transfer to Wisconsin. So he was forced to transfer to Wisconsin. So he overcame a lot. A lot of people can relate to that. And when you get drafted in the third round as opposed to the first round, you show me who believes in who. And so you look back on it and say, ah, he did have to overcome a lot. He did have to face adversity and say, okay, now I'm going to lead this way. But we forget that because of the amount of success he's had since he's been in the league.
Oh, this is no shot, but you just gave me his receipts. I read them with you. Guess what? He shot his shot. Like, what can Russell
Wilson? Why do you think it's over?
Because
he's in the middle of his career.
I'm not saying in terms of performance. I'm saying in terms of every other layer that comes with star quality. So you give me another Super Bowl. That's two. And he's been to three. You give me three. That's great. But you're not understanding that there are other things that he can never make up. And that Q rating, whatever it is, the cut through, he doesn't have that quality.
Winning.
Winning is great. And all these other quarterbacks are winners as
well. His only downfall would be that he plays in Seattle when it's so far away from everybody else. That other than that, he has it.
But the other part of his story is he comes in and there's a big money free agent and he takes his job and starts. And we talk about star power. A lot of the guys you're talking about, they're shooting stars. Russell Wilson, he's been like the North Star for Seattle. He's got that consistency, and a lot of guys haven't been able to do that. And the fact that Seattle's in the mix to compete for a championship every year, that to me makes him special. And all these other guys, they're going to come in and they're going to be flashy and they're going to build their brand. His brand is winning, and his brand is unique, and his story is special. He's overcoming so many things.
You know what they're
going to
do?
What he is.
They're going to show quarterbacks Russell Wilson's interviews, and this is how you conduct yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Win or loss.
As you should. They're
going to show him to the draft prospects coming in, high school quarterbacks, this is how you handle yourself as a quarterback, win, lose, or draw. This is how you conduct yourself.
But he was already in the Super Bowl. Was he the MVP? Well, he was already in the Super Bowl. Was that a shared experience, or was he overshadowed by the Legion of Boom? Like, all
he
those.
He was overshadowed.
Okay, that's my point. Like, we have.
So was Tom Brady early on.
Exactly. And is he? Look, Russell Wilson can win six. And then if he wins six, then you got to Brady's level. Now, where's your blade? What's cutting through beyond that?
The winning is all you need. All he needs to me is another Super Bowl.
What?
And it's a wrap.
One more Super Bowl for Russell Wilson.
He wins another Super Bowl.
He's the biggest star of this era for black quarterback.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You don't see what's coming? You don't see what's next? You don't see it at the
lower
level?
These guys got to win, because I agree with Mangini's point.
I get
that. These guys are shooting stars right now. Until you put together a decade,
Patrick Mahomes is a shooting star.
It's only one year and a half.
With the implication that he's going to
flame out. Well, but you never know.
We said that about a lot of guys. When Cam Newton came in, you know, we thought that he was going to redefine the position. And when RG3, and to some degree, they've been shooting stars. But Russell Wilson has continued to grow as a quarterback. And that, to me, is what defines greatness, is your ability, as people continue to challenge you and those things get harder, can you continue to grow? And he's really done that.
And the other thing that I love about, and again, I love Patrick Mahomes. He's great. But Russell Wilson's doing it with less.
Oh, yeah.
With less. No superstar wide receiver, no superstar tight end, a defensive-minded coach. What the guy has done is absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
you give this kid one more Super Bowl, and it cuts through.
No playoffs 2 years ago. Last year, lost the first game. Like, y'all got me. Look, man, I'm just giving y'all these
two
facts.
Super Bowls.
Look, second all-time in passer rating already. I'm just saying he shot his shot. He's going to be consistently amazing. That doesn't mean that you're going to be the star of this. He's not cutting through beyond. He's already amazing. And this is all you've seen in terms of that translating into other areas to be a star. We're not saying who's the best quarterback. You say who's the biggest star. Yeah.
But you also, you've taken out the race. He's taken out the race part of it. He's been so great for so long. It's not Russell Wilson, the black quarterback. It's Russell Wilson, the great quarterback.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's Russell Wilson, the small quarterback. And to me, that shapes history.
Can I end on this? What's the greatest highlight of Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl?
Damn it. Damn it. Time now for a big story presented by Hyundai. Let's talk Thursday Night Football, where the Seahawks host the Rams in a huge divisional showdown tonight on Fox. The Rams are 3-1 to start the year, but have been winning in spite of Jared Goff, who appears to have fallen off a cliff since signing his massive contract extension right before this season. Mm. But if you look a little closer, Goff's fall actually started last year. Since the Rams beat the Chiefs in that epic Week 13 battle last season, Goff's record is 7-4, but he's completing just 60% of his passes, has more interceptions than touchdowns, and a passer rating about 15 points below league average. I saw this story this morning on Yahoo, I think. The writer put it all together about Goff's last 12 games. And so it leads to the question, do you think the Rams already regret paying Jared Goff?
No, not at all. I think that's too strong. I think the first thing you have to do is deem him as your franchise quarterback. And Sean McVay, Les Snead, they obviously have. Once you say that, then you have to do something that used to happen as a dynamic in our locker room when guys would get drafted or get paid. They would always ask, the vets would walk up to us and say, hey, man, where are you going to retire? And you're like, I don't know. I just got my money. He's like, figure that out now and buy the dirt now. Trust me, the price just going to go up. Mm-hmm. Why wait? He's your franchise quarterback. Pay him now because every single year going forward, the cap's going up and his percentage of the cap is going down. That's a smart move if you're upstairs. Now, through the rough patch, through the dry patch, it's been glossed over. Why? Two things. They were successful. They went to the Super Bowl. They're 3-1 right now. And then the question marks about Todd Gurley and his knee and his issues have really overshadowed what we're seeing for Jared Goff. Am I concerned? Yeah, there's a level of concern because that's not franchise-level playing numbers. But regret, way too strong for me.
I wish someone had told me about the buying the dirt thing because my dirt in New Jersey has gone down. So I don't know if that rule is hard and fast. Look, we're overreacting to one game. The defense. I've said this, but we're reacting to last game. We're reacting to last game where they scored 40 points.
Right.
Okay, which will help you. Which should win. You know, 90.
Quarterback turns over four times.
Okay. Well, maybe the right tackle could block Shaq Barrett. That would help. And the other turnovers, you know, he was under pressure. One was a fourth down play. There was one play where it was a nicely disguised play. He threw the slant. The linebacker popped out and got it. But to look at this and say this in reaction to one game where they scored 40 points, the defense gave up, what, 55 or 40, yeah, whatever it was. And to say that it's his fault.
Did you see his playoff stats last year?
Ooh, don't do this.
2018.
Come on,
playoff
bro.
Stats. That's three games in okay. The playoffs. 55%
when they went to the Super Bowl, right?
55% completion percentage, passer to TD ratio, one TD, two interceptions. 71.7% passer rating.
Okay, well,
I can help you, Coach.
I don't need help.
We could
talk about Todd Gurley and his diminished role and
why are we gonna talk about Todd Gurley?
No, about Jared Goff. What I'm saying is that this is a collective effort, and we want to cite just individual statistics, and you can do that. You can look at it in very small windows, and you can find statistics that support any opinion that you want. But when you look at his body of work, it merited an extension. There's guys like Carson Wentz who can't even get to the playoffs.
Ooh,
but he got paid, right?
Go coach.
He's never been in the playoffs. Right. Let's look at Patrick
Mahomes. Carson Wentz is more talented.
Patrick Mahomes, which should have lit up the playoffs, right? In the first half against New England, he couldn't do anything, just like he couldn't do anything in the first half of New England before, and it was too little. So we can watch and cite windows, but when you look at the body of work, that's why he got paid. Everybody has to adjust and grow when you're a consistently successful team in order to stay ahead of the curve, and the Rams are learning that, and this is part of the learning process.
Eric Mangini.
Absolutely not. They don't regret paying them. They don't regret paying them.
I would like 2.5%.
Yeah, you take that.
Take 1.5, yeah, huh?
Pay for that dirt that I have.
I look at it from this perspective is, they're 3-1.
Man.
If you can go through every quarter of the season and be 3-1, every head coach in the NFL will take that and be 12-4. Quarterback always gets way too much credit when things go well, and they take way too much blame when things go bad. Mm. And if you think you have a franchise quarterback, that's just what the going cost is. You have to pay him. Or what you going to do, start over? So you either pay him or start over. And so they chose to pay him. You can't be mad. Is he going through some rough patches? Of course. But when that pocket is clean and the protection is there, he's an accurate thrower of the ball.
He put up 40 points.
One game. The protection's not there. You keep talking about one game. I'm talking about the last 11 and the playoffs. The postseason.
Where they won the first three, and then he put up 40 in the fourth game, and it wasn't good enough because the defense gave up 55. I think that's a pretty strong argument.
Yeah, I mean, and by the numbers, he has the third worst offensive line performing this year. By the numbers, you can look at Tom Brady in the playoffs last year got progressively worse every single round.
Tom Brady didn't get $110 million guaranteed.
So that's the only justification.
Well, I'm talking about performance. We're talking about regret the contract.
I'm just saying you could put a performance in a capsule and then make it seem anything you want it to look like. Here's the thing about him. Scoring 40 points, most points they scored this year, should win that game. Beyond that, if you look at it, this is the situation that happens when you have a franchise quarterback and people respond to that. Sean McVay has several times come on record say, my play calling is on me. My issues are with the play calling, not necessarily what's going on out there. So there's just too many variables to put it all on Jared Goff. I don't think anyone said
that. Well, I'm not trying to put it all on Jared Goff. I'm just talking about his contract and regret. And I think there are some Rams fans and probably some guys on that 53-man roster that have regret about it. If I'm Les Snead and Sean McVay, no, I don't have regret. I turn on this show and listen to Mangini, Wiley, and TJ Husmanzadeh and say, yeah, these guys are just as crazy as me. And they don't see that this guy is not worth this kind of money to take up this percentage of the cap and to be in that locker room performing like this with all these turnovers. He's not a franchise quarterback. Not worth that kind of money. He's right in there with Andy Dalton. Didn't you play with Andy Dalton?
Did not.
Oh, you didn't? Well, no. You watched a lot of his games. That's why you like Jared Goff.
Look, you obviously don't understand regret. Regret's what's happening in Minnesota. That's regret.
Kirk Cousins.
That's regret. What's happening here is it's market value. And Dak Prescott is about to get paid, and he's probably going to make more than Jared did just because he's the next contract. It's the way it works. The salary cap goes up. The next guy does his deal. He gets market value. That's the way it works.
A young Jared Goff is better than a young Tom Brady.
You know,
and young Ben Roethlisberger. Oh, yes.
You throw the ball 68 times, there's no regret at all. If they regret, they going to just run. Minnesota, what he?
Did you just hear what he just said?
I did. Coach?
Jared Goff is Tom Brady.
A young Jared Goff is better than young Tom Brady. Don't do that.
I can tell you the first year that we went to the Super Bowl in New England, we had 3 offensive touchdowns in the playoffs. Like, that was the reality. Tom's first year as a quarterback. When he wasn't playing,
let me just
tell
you what the key was.
I was there.
I know you were there.
He wasn't very good.
Do you not remember the Lombardi trophy that was handed to y'all at the end of that?
That's the job.
Yeah. Jared Goff didn't get one of those, so I don't compare Jared Goff to Tom Brady.
A winner is a winner. That's the number one job of a quarterback, to win. His team went to the Super Bowl.
And lost. And Tom Brady won, despite whatever his struggles were.
Well, I mean, you're giving Tom Brady credit for the defense, but whatever.
Get it. All right, guys. Before the game kicks off tonight, make sure you download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for a chance to win 25 G's of Terry Bradshaw's money. We're like Marcellus. The last question in tonight's game is, which team will win and by how many points? So who you got?
Look, I was going to say Seattle 27-24, but now I'm going to go 37-0. Jared Goff's going to be a disaster.
Oh, wow. You're going to let your emotions get in your mate. You're going to mess your money up thinking like this.
It's going to be closer than that 31-27 Seattle win, so I can now be invited back over, Russell.
We're joined now by longtime NFL offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz. All right, let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott and the Cowboys host Aaron Rodgers and the Packers Sunday on Fox. Rodgers is looking for answers after a tough home loss to the Eagles that saw his best receiver, Devontae Adams, go down with an injury. Adams is unlikely to play Sunday, and yesterday, Rodgers was asked about his confidence in his depleted receiving corps.
Well, my confidence starts with myself, and I have a lot of confidence in my preparation and the expectations that I'll play well on Sunday, and that I'll be able to help those guys raise the level of their play by my own play and by the communication. A lot of stuff that's going to happen on Sunday will happen in the locker room, in the meeting rooms, before practice, on the practice field, and after practice. And we'll have to make sure that we're sharp in our communication and those guys feel ready to play.
All right, so Aaron Rodgers asked about his confidence in his wide receivers. He's confident in Aaron Rodgers. Do you like Aaron Rodgers' mindset heading into this Cowboys matchup?
I love it. This is Aaron Rodgers. I think his confidence, and justly so, is always orbited around his ability. It's always Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, because there have been times in the past, no defense, times in the past, no running game in the past, no offensive line. So Aaron Rodgers has gotten to this level of greatness because of Aaron Rodgers. And right now, the identity issues with this offense, the fact that he's trying to have a new relationship form with his young head coach, I think Aaron Rodgers has realized that I know how this equation goes. I will be the one holding this at the end, good or bad. So why not go to the end in mindset and make sure that I take all the responsibility? That's how he rolls.
We're going to see a lot of ad-libbing on Sunday, in my opinion, from him, right? With all these wide receivers out, you have a new offense, you're still working through a lot of things in the second half of ball games, right? Come out fast with your script. Matt LaFleur hasn't really learned how to call the second half of a game yet.
True.
And with the communication and his young wide receivers, we've seen the past has not been great. I feel like this is a game where he's going to ad-lib a lot. He's going to run around, try to make plays, and get his offense in the right direction. Now, is that great for this offense? Probably not. But Rodgers thinks he can be that guy, and I expect that to be Sunday. I'm fine with the mindset. I like being confident in himself. That's good. It's worked in his career so far.
Yep.
When you're Aaron Rodgers, you're the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. You have to exude this type of confidence. If you don't exude this type of confidence, the rest of the guys are going to feel we don't have a chance, period. Mm-hmm. Now, what's going to happen is Dallas is going to man these guys up. Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, just run some crossing routes. Don't make these guys have to get themselves open. Let the design and the concept of the play at least give them a chance to get open. If they're going to play man, let the designer of the play get them open. If they're going to play zone, it's easy. You just play pitch and catch as long as the protection is there. And so he has to exude this type of confidence. If he doesn't, it's going to be a long day.
I'm not sure if he has to. I think this is a lack of confidence he's expressing in everyone else besides Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not sure.
You look at those receivers, no disrespect. They're not household names. Nope. And that's okay, because everybody has to start somewhere. One of these guys can blow up and say, okay, I'm going to become one. But going into this, he's looking at it like...
He did have an opportunity, though, TJ, to say that the week of preparation and what Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff come up with will determine the level of success. He talked about himself.
Because he wants it to be on him. It's on me.
I think he has a lack of confidence, not just in the receiving core, but in the coaching staff as well. And it's like, I'm going to have to do this. We're reduced to just me, and I'm going to draw up some plays in the dirt. He calls it ad-libbing. We're going to figure it out on the fly because, you know, this coach thinks he's got this little system that's going to correct the fact they haven't given me the proper support and personnel.
Well, he's going to build this house with no subcontractors. You ever did that? Like, I'm going to be on site every day watching.
Good luck.
Yeah, right. It's going to take twice as long and cost twice as much. But you know what? I'm going to be here to make sure this is handled properly. He has four undrafted wide receivers in the fifth rounder. Eddie Delahousay, the great jockey. You can't just throw him on any horse. You know what I'm saying? And they're going to ride the same. And he's just looking at his team. He's like, I have to fake this funk. I have to actually make these guys believe in themselves because, let's be real, why should I believe in
them? You know what they can do, though? They can, in essence, make Jimmy Graham the number one receiver. Flex him out.
Oh, they've been trying that.
I mean, how many years?
Well, if he feels, if you got all these undrafted guys,
I get it.
He's your only proven guy that has got it done.
That dropped that pass in the back of the end zone that could have made a difference.
But he's your only, if this is how he feels, he's basically your only chance in the passing game.
You're right and you're wrong. Well, I don't know what's up with Jimmy Graham. Is there toothpaste left in there like we think it should be? Jimmy Graham cracked, like crumbled.
Well, look, if you say no, you can find out this Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
That's a good point.
I think we'll find out a lot about Matt LaFleur as well, because to your point about scheming things up, they haven't done that the last couple years. Now you have no wide receivers. Like, you have to find ways to get these guys open against a really good defense. If you do not find unique formations, you mentioned the mesh routes, a man coverage. If you can't do that, then that's why Aaron Rodgers doesn't trust the offense.
Maybe he's seen that
this is not in the game plan right now, because this is the problem with the Packers' offense the last 3 years. They don't scheme anyone open. With no wide receivers, you have to do that. You have to get in bunch formations. You have to motion. You have to find unique ways to get these guys open. Use the screen game. Use your run game. Play action pass. All these things that McCarthy never really did. Matt LaFleur has to do that this weekend for Rodgers to really believe in him.
That creative offense we saw in Tennessee last year. You remember
LaFleur? Look, at the end of the day.
Stop.
Aaron Rodgers is looking across at the Dallas Cowboys, who have arguably the most complete roster in football, and he has the most incomplete roster in football, and he's forced to do it on his own, put on a Superman. I don't think he has confidence in himself or his teammates. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley.
Ah.
You're pumped for the debut.
Oh, yeah.
SmackDown on Fox tomorrow night. We have our championship belts, and we're not going to get these back. They now belong to us.
Oh, yeah, brother.
All right, Fox Sports.
This is the blue over here, brother.
All right, let's move on. Fox Sports NBA analyst Ketino Mobley is here with us now. Let's get to Darnell's question of the day.
Tired.
Darnell, take it away.
All right, guys, let's talk about the Ball family, where a couple weeks ago, LeVar and Lonzo got into it about the Big Baller brand and on their Facebook show, and LeVar ended up calling Lonzo damaged goods. Well, Lonzo said everything was cool since then, but he might not be cool with the latest news about his dad. Reportedly, LeVar is being sued by his former Triple B business partner, who was alleging LeVar embezzled $2.6 million from the company. And this got me thinking about my guy Kobe, who also ended up cutting off his parents over money conflicts. I want to ask you guys, do you think this is heading down the same path as Kobe and his dad?
It's not headed down a good path. And I don't know about the truth of these allegations. I don't think any of us do. But when you get into a mudslinging contest and they slung mud at the guy that was running the business, now he's slinging it back. And this, to me, just reminds me of a typical Hollywood story, child star, parents a little too much control, a little too involved in the business end. And the next thing you know, Gary Coleman suing his parents for you mismanaged my money, or Lindsay Lohan is suing
Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah. That's this, you know, these are LA guys. The dad wanted to be a big part of the business, and you run the risk when you do business with family of it spinning out of control.
I'm glad you said that. It's going down the wrong path. We don't know how far, to what extent. I think we're all going to get our answers, and it's going to be in the next son, in LaMelo Ball, once he comes to the NBA. Mm-hmm. How he takes control of his brand, how much of his dad is involved in that brand creation, what moves he makes differently than what we saw with Lonzo. So our answer is forthcoming, but let's go into the guesswork. My first response was, this is a countersuit. So, Mr. Allen Foster, while you were president and all these wrongdoings were occurring, what was your morality in those moments? What was your involvement in those moments? Not to discredit the countersuit, but it's just interesting. Like you said, mud flies. Now more mud has to fly. Two, I look at this as an investment gone wrong. People know of LeVar, South Central cat. I went to school with his brothers. He had an investment strategy, which was to remove himself from our conditions and circumstances, go way out to Chino Hills, and really Old Testament his family. Mm-hmm. Like, get him away from this madness and create three boys that are going to go to the NBA. Choose the woman who he thought gave him the best opportunities, a former athlete, and stay out there. And I'm invested in the ball, and his wife is invested in the brains. Simple as that. That was their dynamic. And when they all made it, got to this level of recognition, and it came to fruition, he's like, okay, part of this investment is our brand. Part of this investment is, what is this brand going to look like? So are these business expenses towards the investment of the brand, of the ball creation? Because let's just be real. There's a lot of guys that have went number two overall. Not all of them had that machine with them as this brand helped create for Lonzo. Had Magic Johnson sitting there on his introductory press conference saying he's going to be in the rafters. This guy is going to be an all-timer. That's a part of this brand. So I don't know how much of these expenses were investments in that brand, in the Triple B, or exploitation of his kids and what he did with his kids.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I don't even know this guy. Like you said, it's all speculation at the moment until facts come out. As far as Kobe and it being similar to what Kobe was 18 years old. That was one thing. Kobe's way more strong-minded than Lonzo Ball when it comes to this. Do Lonzo Ball's father gets credit for a lot? Yes, you do. But at the end of the day, as a parent, my kids don't owe me anything. Yeah. What I do for them, it's not even a sacrifice. I slept with that person to have children, and then now I have to do the best for those children. Now, they're not children anymore. they're actually grown men. If you think about it, even the youngest one, he's still a grown man. He's over in Australia killing it right now.
Yeah.
Right? So it's still his talent. Yeah, you came from the mother and the father, but it's him doing it. So you're going to accept all the things that are good about the child and all the success, but when it's bad, now you're going to run for the hills and say you damaged goods. I'm not going for that. Even if that guy is still president of that company, doesn't matter. The guy still on top of him is the father.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that guy says, you know what, listen, this is about 200,000 missing. What do you think the father will say? Don't worry about it. It's mine. I got it. It's cool.
Yeah.
He can't go to the sons because the sons are still sons. Mm. So he's going to the father, and maybe he did have the discussion. Maybe that's why he is countersuiting. I have no clue. But is it going down the wrong path? I think it is. I don't think people should be... what they say back in the day, airing dirty laundry like this,
yeah.
Because it seems like it's a problem for everybody, you know, as far as inside the family. But, you know, sometimes, you know, not sometimes, a lot of times, when it's money involved, ugly things come out.
Preach. Marcellus, you spoke to this. LeVar had a vision a long years ago.
Yes.
And the only thing I think that he may have misinterpreted is what his role is supposed to be in executing that vision beyond fathering those kids up until a certain age. And then you raise a kid to push them out of the nest, mm-hmm. and have them stand on their own two feet. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, there's been a misunderstanding of our culture or a misapplication of our culture as it relates to our kids. You put all this energy into them so that they can stand on their own two feet. And I don't think LeVar has let go. And again, it's hard for me to question any man, any parent about how they do with their kids. But just like you said, Catino, to me, Lonzo's a grown man. I think the dad should back up out of the business so there won't be any disagreements. LeVar did a great job with these kids. Mm-hmm. He should just be standing around beating his chest. Yeah, look what I did.
Exactly.
I put you guys in position to have success. Now go run with it, and I'm going to play the back.
Right.
Yeah, his biggest indiscretion, the father, LeVar, is he got ahead of his skis. Mm-hmm. Like, he took his investment in his kids. He tried to execute that in terms of a brand. Mm-hmm. And then he ran into a wall because he didn't have the business acumen to mm-hmm. fulfill what he desired.
Right.
Then the pride kicks in. Mm-hmm. And look, I am the son of the most proud, excessively proud mother mm-hmm. who's no longer here, who I used to confuse her pride for me for her glossing and her flossing and sometimes being real gloating to others. And I was like, Mom, we have to recalibrate this.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, they're so invested and so involved that they get caught in the haze. And that's what's happening to him right now.
But that's my point. Think about that. They accept the success, but they don't accept the failures mm-hmm. of the child, right? Mm-hmm. It's always somebody else's fault. But it's my fault. It's my success when the child succeeds. I just, you know what I mean?
All right, let's move to the NCAA and the California Fair Pay to Play Act. The law Governor Gavin Newsom signed earlier this week on the set of LeBron James' HBO TV show, The Shop. The law gives California college athletes the freedom to profit from their likeness and image through endorsement, sponsorships, and merchandise sales, things that are all prohibited by the NCAA rules. Yesterday, I stated on this show that the law's intention is to emancipate shoe company executives, not college athletes, and maintain the status quo. The so-called Adidas investigation and trials that made felons out of shoe executives and college basketball assistant coaches are the real impetus behind the Fair Pay to Play Act. The implementation of the law frees Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, and the rest to legally repackage the money they traditionally illegally funnel to top college athletes. Instead of direct cash payments to parents, uncles, AAU coaches, and assistant coaches, the shoe companies can now strike endorsement deals for T-shirt sales and whatnot using the likeness of high-profile athletes. Oh, but the new law did include a key restriction. If a school has a shoe deal in place with a shoe company, the athlete can't strike a deal with a competitor. But the athlete, he's free. No, he's not. That's why I call this Jim Crow, not Abe Lincoln. This is about protecting shoe companies, not liberating athletes. It's not even about damaging NCAA mandated amateurism. It's redefining the status quo and selling it to the public as freedom. LeBron James is the mascot for all of it. Newsom and Nike use LeBron to convince college athletes and sports fans that significant progress has been made. This law is more agent of chaos than solution for the NCAA's outdated model of amateurism. It's not a step in the right direction for college basketball, college football, or the professional leagues they support. It's going to provoke other states to enact their own set of unique laws. We live in this era where social media and the Hollywood culture push us to embrace chaos and tear down every American institution. It's a mistake. College athletics should be reformed by experts within the industry, not destroyed by politicians looking to build a brand. Newsom and Nancy Skinner, the California State Senator who sponsored the Fair Pay to Play Act, are a couple of Northern California activists who don't have the best interests of athletes or athletics in mind. They're promoters of institutional chaos. Just because Nike told LeBron to fall for their okey-doke doesn't mean you have to. I want to end NCAA amateurism. There are far smarter ways to do it than the Fair Pay to Play Act. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us rolling here. Yeah. Think the Fair Pay to Play Act causes more chaos than solution?
If I had to lean one way, I would say chaos in this respect. A lot of moving parts here, so therefore there are going to be a lot of unintended consequences, good ones and bad ones. Is this a baby step towards the end goal, or is this a huge leap towards the end goal? And unfortunately, I think that's already been lost. Pay the athletes was the end goal, and this is a switcheroo and distraction from that. Giving only the top college players a chance at endorsement likeness dollars is a true distraction from what the intended goal was, were to pay all the athletes. So we've already had a misstep or a baby step in that direction. What are these unintended consequences? Two jump to mind. One, in the locker room. So now I'm on a team with Trevor Lawrence. I'm at Clemson, and he's big time. He's going to get his money. But these rosters are 100 deep. A lot of walk-ons. A lot of guys sitting there say, hey, man, you're a four-star. You're playing before me, but I deserve an opportunity. Therefore, I deserve opportunity at the money that we get from our likeness. Is that opportunity going to be granted? So there's going to be infighting just at the professional level, but now with less mature players, 18 to 21, 22 years old. Two, the businesses in the community, especially local businesses, B to C level, are going to be able to directly go to that athlete and pay him, which is tremendous. But then the school is going to get left out of that. I used to be in the school program. I used to be on the school screen during the games. Now I'm going directly to you, Trevor Lawrence. The school is sitting there saying, wait a minute, that's a bottom line issue that is affecting our pockets. So where's that resentment going to lie? Are they just going to throw up their hands and say new status quo, or are they going to push back? Those questions and more need to be answered before I can say this is a true solution.
Well, for the California law, I know there's other states that are working on laws. We have 3.5 years to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to affect till January of 2023. By then, we'll have other states that probably jump the line. We'll have litigation to figure out how to do this. I do think, to your point, there will be regulations put in place. This has to be out in the open. It cannot be under the table anymore, even though it could be legal under the table. I think it has to be out in the open. And what you brought up, they're valid concerns. But we need to go to a system that just allows players to have a little extra money in their pockets based off their image, name, and likeness. I don't think paying players, per se, is the way to go. This is why this is a great start to this. I think we've overestimated how this is going to reach. If you look at a football team with 85 scholarship guys, how many guys are truly going to make five, six, seven figures? Not seven figures, I don't think. five figures. Probably not very many. There'd be a lot of guys that are able to go home to their hometown touchdown club and speak for $1,000. Yeah. There'd be guys be able to go get a free lunch on campus. I'm watching this show on the Florida Gators today on a behind-the-scenes thing, and Mullen's wife, the head coach, had to call the NCAA to make sure that she could bring a sandwich to a player that just had surgery. Like, that needs to be done, right? We agree on that. This is the first step in that process, and we don't know yet how it's going to play out. We all have our ideas. I think yours are valid. I think yours are valid, too. That could be the reason behind this, but the start of this is the way to go, and we now have 3.5 years, at least in California, to figure it out. Who knows if they'll do it? Who knows if this will be repealed by then? Who knows how the NCAA will react? There are coaches on record now starting to agree with the principle of this. But for California alone, we have 3.5 years to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that there are coaches that have figured out, hey, I'm going to jump on board with this because they've heard from their shoe reps and executives, hey, this is good for us, or it's good for you. So I'm not surprised. What disappoints me is athletics are special. And just to be quite honest, I'm going to say this, and people may not like me for it. Football and basketball have been very good to people that look like me.
Yeah.
And when I see people that don't look like me, Nancy Skinner and Gavin Newsom, jump in here and say, I got the solution, and you're not involved in athletics at all, I want some experts. And I don't want LeBron in here after the fact. He ain't got a damn thing to do with this bill. He's doing what Nike's told him to do. He wasn't part of the formation of it. He never participated in college athletics. I don't need a mascot. I want experts to come in here and fix and remodel college athletics in a way that I still feel confident football and basketball is going to work for me and people that come from my situation. And so, and I think there's some aggressive things that the NFL, the NBA should be doing to support college athletics, football and basketball, because they've been very good to them. I want to see real solutions, not this stopgap measure that was done because James Gatto, from the Adidas executive, got 9 months in prison, and damn it, we got to fix that very quickly to make sure none of these other shoe executives go to jail. I want real solutions to end amateurism and to be fair to these athletics without tearing this down. And again, I think everybody gets so emotional and caught up, and they just, we hate the NCAA, we hate everything, let's all tear it down. When actually, if you go look at it, and you go back and listen to our A block about these quarterbacks and who's getting paid and all the money that's going into these professional sports, go look at the NBA. This model is working. It needs to be remodeled, not destroyed.
Needs to be redefined, certainly. And we all know perfect is the enemy of good, so I'm not looking for a perfect system. But the step that they took is not the step that I thought was necessary, because it let the schools off the hook. We're talking about redefining amateurism, and all we're doing is talking about a relationship between companies, shoe companies, local companies, and the athlete on the side. So there's no base salary for any athlete. There's no base. If you want to call the education the base salary, then we're in the same status quo we were before this bill. Governor Newsom, who I respect, who I've met, who I think has his heart in the right place, maybe not the most vested interest and understanding of experience, because this act really put the shoe companies in a powerful position. The school's off the hook, and then the schools are going to recalibrate this new relationship between its athletes and have a response. And I don't think that this act takes that into account.
The problem with the base salary of college athletics is you have to spread it around to all the sports, right? You can't just be football or basketball. There'll be plenty of lawsuits around fairness of that, right? And how do you, is it $2,000 a month? Is it $3,000 a month? Is it $4,000 a month? Yes, this let the colleges off the hook, but I do think there's going to have to be a compliance involved with the colleges. Like, there's going to have to be, because you probably have to file taxes on this money. Who's going to help you set that up? College will have to help. Like, there's going to be some, I think, I could be wrong, some regulations put in place between now and January of 2023. I don't know what that's going to be. I don't trust they're going to do it right, I don't think. We'll see when the time comes.
There's another group being let off the hook here, and because I agree with you. These professional leagues that benefit directly from college football and basketball, they need to be part of the solution for college, because they've been benefiting greatly from college athletics. And so there are there's a way to improve football and basketball in America while being economically fair to the kids that are being exploited. And there's the handful of superstars. I don't feel like I needed any more than the education Ball State gave me. My level of value didn't elevate beyond, hey, give me an education. You brought me out of the ghetto, you gave me education, fair exchange. Let's take care of the guys that drive it, make it healthy. I would love to see something where I would, again, I've argued on this show, I'd have no problem if Zion Williamson somehow made $3 or $4 million a year while he was at Duke. No problem with that. I think it's good for Zion. I think it's good for the NBA. Those are the type of solutions I want to see explored rather than these stopgap measures. Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh is back.
Welcome back.
Let's move to Lamar Jackson. Sponsored by the Spark Cash Card from Capital One. Lamar is looking to bounce back this week against a tough Steelers defense after a subpar showing in the Ravens' loss to the Cleveland last week. Lamar started the season red hot and appeared to be on the verge of shutting up all of his critics, but lately he started to look a little more like the old Lamar. With huge drops in his numbers across the board between the Ravens' wins in week one and two.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
And their back-to-back losses in weeks three and four. All right, the question here is, expect Lamar to bounce back against the Steelers? I think he's going to have tough sledding. I think the Steelers found something on defense last week against the Bengals, that pass rush. And I think the Steelers and a desperate Mike Tomlin are going to be a problem for Lamar and the Ravens.
I expect Lamar Jackson to bounce back, and I think it's still not going to land in a good place in terms of how we receive Lamar Jackson. He's in a no-win situation in this game. Think about it. You're playing against the Steelers. That's a 1-3 bunch. You go out there and beat them and do well. There you go again, playing against another sorry team, the Lamar Jackson narrative. But then if you go out there and struggle, dang, we back to the last year narrative. You can't even play quarterback. You can't even lead your team to a victory over a team that only had one victory before. So this is one of those games I don't like to call a trap game or mail-in game, but in terms of Lamar Jackson, the story and the validation of him at the quarterback position, I don't think this does anything for that conversation. You need the win. You need your defense, who's been giving up over 500 yards per the last two games, to show up. But in terms of Lamar Jackson, I don't think we're going to have much evidence towards his resume.
You put him under a microscope, I mean, it is what it is. He's played well against Arizona, Miami, he struggled against Kansas City and Cleveland. That's just the truth. Now, do I expect him to bounce back? I do, because when I look at what the Steelers did against Cincinnati's offensive line is terrible. They couldn't block me right now. And so Pittsburgh, they feasted on that. They're not going to do that against Baltimore. They're not just going to manhandle Baltimore up front. The Steelers aren't the Steelers of old. Defensively, Baltimore's defense should be able to keep the Pittsburgh offense in check. That game was nip and tuck against the Bengals until they kind of pulled away late. And so I expect him to bounce back. He does well against the bad teams. At least
I'm not convinced the Steelers are a bad team. They're off to a bad start. I'm not convinced they're a bad team.
Their defense created 5 turnovers in San Francisco and they still lost.
No. I get it. They're off to a bad start. I'm not convinced they're a bad team. I like the Minkum Fitzpatrick pickup.
I love that pickup.
I do believe the Steelers' defense is going to be a good pass rush defense. I don't think, did they take advantage of a bad Bengals offensive line? Yes. But T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, those guys are for real. And I disagree with you. Anytime you go on the road in your division, and particularly you go on the road to Pittsburgh, and Mike Tomlin's got his back up against the wall, and you pull off a victory, that's a damn good look for Lamar Jackson, regardless of what Pittsburgh's record is. And again, it's just like Lamar has already said, it's going to be crazy up in Pittsburgh. The Steelers fans haven't given up on this season yet, and I don't think anybody in that Steelers organization has. I think this is a good test for Lamar.
It's going to be great resistance, the atmosphere, the team is poised to rebound and correct their season from the early struggles. All that's true. But if he goes up there and wins that game, trust me, I understand people are going to just say, you beat Pittsburgh. They're lowly Pittsburgh this year. He has the number one ranked offense and the number 27th ranked defense. And we're talking about Baltimore. I don't remember Baltimore ever being in this position where you're like, I mean, Jamal Lewis days, but still
it's rare.
It's rare. Like, yeah. He's carrying. He literally, in many moments, is carrying this Baltimore defense to that point. I just know that how this is going to land. He needs to win because that's what you're supposed to do. Win the games you're expected to win. However, when he does that, we're going to be right back in this conversation. Is he still a real quarterback?
And you would take that over, you're not a real quarterback.
Yeah.
So you'll take that. He'll win the game. I believe he'll bounce back, and you'll take it.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Russell Wilson.
You.
Yeah.
You.
Oh.
You're on a hot streak with your big dummy of the day.
What do you mean streak?
Making two in a row.
What ain't a streak?
Yup.
That's just one.
I figured out some things today, Marcus.
Don't do it.
Hey, man. Somebody said, I realized when I left Ball State, oh, I didn't need to learn nothing else. That answers all our problems on this show. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Mm. When did I say that? I don't remember saying that.
I remember that. I felt it.
Let's talk Russell Wilson, who is off to a tremendous start this year.
I caught that.
And tonight is up against Sean McVay's Rams team that just gave up 55 points to Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers. Marcellus, you think Russ carves up the Rams like Jameis Winston did?
Oh, man, look, he needs to. They haven't beaten the Rams in 2 years. Week 5, 2017. Sean McVay effect and Jared Goff out there. We didn't see much of Todd Gurley, so I think that the Rams are going to put up a good fight, but he wins the game closely. Russell Wilson, 31-27. Not carve him up, but certainly get what he wants.
Russell Wilson throws for 350 yards and four TDs tonight.
Ooh, that's
and proves my point that Russell Wilson – is the greatest quarterback of the new black quarterback era. Uncle Jimmy, you got that damn stupid African American shirt on again today, but man. I know you agree with me. This era is defined by Russell Wilson, not Colin Kaepernick.
Man, let me tell you something.
What?
I can give less than four flying farts in the wind whether or not Russell Wilson carves up the Rams, Sean McVay, or a Christmas ham. In the words of Clark Gable, frankly, my dear, I really don't give a damn.
Right.
Okay.
What concerns me is the fact that I done had to be sunk here again on behalf of the Caprican Nations.
Sunk.
To speak on behalf of all Caprican Americans and our leader, Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. Talk to me. Talk to me.
How dare you? How dare you claim that anybody else beside the great silent leader, Colin Kaepernick.
The great silent
the
leader?
The greatest black quarterback, not just of our time, but of our era. No man since Muhammad Ali has ever experienced such scrutiny. Yeah. Nobody else has been so ostracized, circumcised. And for what? Look, man.
Circumcised.
Kaepernick is part of the great African-American suburban struggle. He's the original mulatto brother.
Oh, man.
And how dare you criticize and blasphemize and idolatrize and attempt to ostracize the Egyptian queen herself.
Oh, man.
Les Nettie. We here at the Nation call her Laquita Patrick.
Laquita Patrick.
You said Cap's not a winner. Let me ask you this. Has Russell Wilson ever won an Emmy?
Because
Cap won a little Emmy for that Cap commercial. You know that one for that Nike commercial?
Yeah, that's right.
That might have went over your head a little bit.
He did.
He did.
Hey, I'm also going to give you this little fun fact, this little ditty. Hey, you do know that Cap and Nettie are the reigning Bid Wiz champions of the Southwest Conference right now. You know they took the title from Dwayne Wade and Gabby Union. They did it last year at LeBron James All-Star Basketball Festival.
Oh, so those
can
are
Russell
the
Wilson? Can Russell Wilson and Sierra say that they got that? Can they even get an invite?
To the Bid Wiz tournament? Yeah, I think they can.
You are dumb.
Look, man, y'all done seen the videos, man.
What's it?
Caps up every day at 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
arm so strong, he overthrowing receivers. You seen him overthrow Eric Reed. He overthrew Odell Beckham Jr.
Get
hey, man, is Russell Wilson getting up at 5 o'clock?
No.
When was the last time you seen Russell Wilson overthrow a wide receiver? Hey, man, real talk.
Nah.
I'm going to settle this right now. Okay. You know how you can tell that Russell Wilson is the real black quarterback? Huh?
Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson?
You know how you can tell, that Colin Kaepernick is the real brother?
How?
You know you can tell?
What?
Because he the one that can't get a job. All that experience, that brother still can't get a job.
All right, listen. I got Russell Wilson at a 79 on my approval rating.
Look at us.
He's almost GOAT status. Probably will be after tonight's game.
Yeah, can't say anything bad about Russell Wilson. I don't know about this whole era king star of it, but he's balling out of control, one away from GOAT status. Like America thinks, same thing.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to The Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.